13-20-199, the City of San Antonio versus Arturo Lopez and Elizabeth Lopez. This is a transfer case from the Fourth Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to focus, at least my presentation, on three main points. The first is the interaction, if any, between administrative remedies, because in this particular case, we have the administrative remedy of a appeal under a writ of certiorari of Board of Adjustment's decision with regard to non-conforming use, and that's under 211. But simultaneously, we also have the appellees going through a rezoning process. And since both deal with use, which is the ultimate issue in this case, it's of interest to the parties and certainly to the City of San Antonio how, if at all, these two administrative remedies and processes interact with one another in the context of can we proceed now or must we wait or should we wait? The second issue is with regard to if the court finds that the writ of cert for the non-conforming use should proceed forward, what, if any, other causes of action should be heard at that time? With regard to this particular case, we do have some extraneous claims as they relate to takings, injunctive relief for criminal courts, as well as injunctive relief for the City of San Antonio's police.
Mr. Adams,
Yes, Your Honor.
I do want to ask a question because I've reviewed the record and I did find the record that we can see two temporary restraining orders. One of them says it's handwritten. It says second, I believe. And in that portion of the TRO that talks about prosecution, the citations being restrained, they are stricken. And I don't see another TRO that contains that language restraining the city from either writing citations or prosecuting those citations. Are we missing something? Is the record incomplete?
No, Your Honor. The TRO, of course, is limited in time. However, because this case was going up on appeal, the city has refrained from enforcing or writing further citations or further investigations with regard to that. So it's been a voluntary stepping back on the city's part. However, the appellees are requesting injunctive relief in that regard and certainly have in the past on the TRO and the temporary injunction.
So are the TROs are expired at this point?
They are, Your Honor. But so the city is honoring the spirit of those TROs and not the timeline.
Okay.
So the court granted, if I understand, the court granted those restrictions, but then I guess by some sort of agreement between the parties, they're just kind of not paying attention to those two restrictions?
Well, we're not enforcing the revocation of the certificate of occupancy. So we're allowing them to continue to produce cement, to continue to do their business. And so again, it's one of those things where we are honoring the spirit of those orders, if not the 14-day timelines.
Okay, so, let me ask you this then. With regards to Section 211, there is my recollection that there is some language with regards to the issuance of TROs. Is it your contention that those TROs are limited to the restraining of revoking the non-conforming use certificate?
Your Honor, certainly in the context of a certificate of occupancy on it, they can ask for a TRO with regard to that for it to be reinstated, minus, of course, a finding or a claim by the city that there is an imminent peril. That is not the case here. So they have not requested that to be returned at this point. So in other words, I do agree with the court, but that's not the fact pattern or the procedural pattern that we find ourselves in.
Okay.
So what, if anything, on the second point that I'd like to discuss, could be heard if we go forward with the writ of certiorari on this non-conforming use issue? And then the third point is going to be jurisdiction. Do courts of equity have the injunctive powers to affect a criminal court's and stay a criminal court's docket? And what are the circumstances? Do they apply in this case? And do courts of equity have injunctive powers over the city's police powers, our enforcement ability? So if we start with the first issue, and that is the administrative remedies. We've got two administrative remedies that the appellees are applying. And of course, the first is the appeal under 211 of non-conforming use. The other is rezoning. Both deal ultimately with the use of the property. There are some distinctions, of course. Non-conforming use is far more limited, whereas a rezoning allows a great deal more latitude. And the comparison between the two is a fly trapped in amber, if you will, under non-conforming use. If you have non-conforming use privileges, then that property has to be used, or those properties have to be used in that exact same manner. You can't expand it, you can't change it. And if you abandon it for a year and a day, then you've lost it. And if you expand it, you potentially lose it. If you make changes, you potentially you lose it as well. Whereas in a rezoning instance, let's say a place has been rezoned commercial industrial, and they want to convert an office complex into a manufacturing plant. So long as they have the correct permits, of course, for any construction issues, they can do that, and that's fine. Whereas if you look at it in the context of a non-conforming use, you lose that non-conforming use if you go from an office complex to a manufacturing plant.
Mr. Adams, in regards to that, you seem to admit in your brief that the reason they've not exhausted their administrative remedies is because they chose to seek rezoning. Now, if they had not chosen rezoning, would their Board of Adjustments writ of certiorari be right now?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it would be.
Aren't the two mutually exclusive because they're seeking different remedies?
They are seeking different remedies, but the ultimate aim of them is the use of that. And if they succeed in the rezoning, Your Honor, then that's an even better result, frankly, than the non-conforming use appeal, because now they have a greater latitude in the use of that property. They're not stuck with doing exactly what they had done before. And it would
Mr. Adams, can't they simultaneously proceed forward with both of them as they are doing it? Both the rezoning, in case the rezoning don't work, they can still continue to try to do the temporary occupancy so that they're not mandated to do one or the other. The both of them are going simultaneously, correct?
I agree, Your Honor. They can. What makes it unique is, and I've looked for cases that deal with this fact pattern, and I can't find it. And that may be more a reflection of my limitations as a researcher than anything else. But it seems to me that, and certainly a number of the cases that I've looked at, when somebody is availing themselves of an administrative remedy, then the trial court should stay proceeding on the other issues. And so again, when we look at, this is all about the use of this property, and the non-conforming use appeal is again related to getting their grandfathered clause rights on this property back into play versus the rezoning. At the very least, if they get the rezoning, then everything on the use end of things on the NCU is moot. It's irrelevant because now they're actually in a better position.
Yeah, but what occurs is in February 20 is that it seems like there's been for various reasons reset, and the temporary occupancy continues to move forward because they were trying to do the rezoning, which all came to a halt in April of 2020. I'm assuming due to due to COVID. And so, so how, if the administrative proceedings have stalled for whatever reason, how can we say they haven't exhausted their administrative proceedings and not allow them, if the city is proceeding forward with their stopping their business? I mean, I understand that they still have these two places going, but in front of them, they have an order from the city to stop doing business.
Correct. And they absolutely have the right to appeal that revocation of the certificate of occupancy. And again, that's not in our fact pattern. That's not an issue or procedural issue that has occurred.
Does that stop them from doing this? I guess that's the big question. Since they made a decision not to proceed forward on that, is that an absolutely halt from them proceeding in the manner of which they have proceeded?
Right, and that's the big question, which I haven't found any case law directly on. How do these interact? And, you know, again, there are some cases that suggest that when, even if it's a primary versus exclusive jurisdiction administrative process, that when you're dealing with something fairly complex, which I would say that the zoning issues fall into that category, that the better course of action is for the courts to just stay the proceedings and let the administrative process take its course. And then once we get a final decision one way or the other, which we aren't at yet on either of those instances, only at that point, you know, should the trial court then take up those issues, because at that point, then the dust has been cleared. There's no uncertainty. The administrative process has reached a final conclusion. And so for judicial economy, for the idea that some of these issues may become moot, again, I would argue that a stay would be appropriate for so long as they are pursuing the rezoning issues. Now, with regard to any extraneous charges or claims that they've made, I would argue to the court that they cannot do so for a number of reasons. The first is that we do not have finality at this point with the Nonconforming Use Board of Adjustments case. Because if we look at 211, it provides the process. You get to bring up your appeal to the Board of Adjustments. They get to make their decision. You get to appeal that to a district court. And the district court reviews that decision under a substantial evidence basis. And it's just that. It doesn't say you get to toss a smorgasbord of different kinds of claims. And of course, the burden of proof and the standard of proof is very different with substantial evidence versus preponderance or any of the others. And as such, the decision of the board is not final. That administrative process, therefore, is not final until that district court judge has made a decision on the Board of Adjustments. And at that point, then we have a final decision. The administrative process under 211 is over. And then, if applicable, these additional extraneous claims can be made. But at this point, it's not ripe, Your Honors. There's also a number of cases that have been previously discussed with regard to takings and so forth, where, again, while we're going through this administrative process, it is not timely because Texas views exclusive jurisdiction towards the process under 211, right? And so since it's exclusive jurisdiction, then that has to be completed. We have to get a final result before it can go forward onto other matters. I see I'm running out of time, so I'll race to the last issue, which is whether courts of equity have jurisdiction over criminal courts and police power enforcement by the city. Really quick, the cases are very clear that the law has to be void. That's number one. Number two, it also has to deal with a vested property right. At this point, as best I can tell, this is a as-applied challenge, not a facial challenge. It's probably best made in the criminal courts, not in a court of equity. And I don't see any challenges that any of the laws are void, right? So that's the first hurdle. The second is a vested property right. And I'm out of time, Your Honors.
Any questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Mrs. Lineberger, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to address some of the court's questions first. There was a question about whether or not the TROs expired, and I will say that they expired because they can only go for 14 days, and you're only allowed one. You're only allowed to renew that once, so they expired by law under the 14 days, two time rule. We were applying, as the record would show, for a plea to, for a temporary injunction to be able to extend that. And that is when the appellants filed their temporary injunction, I mean, their plea to the jurisdiction. So that's why we are where we are. There's also a stay that is allowed for interlocutory appeals, which may also play into why the city has not pursued the citations, which we are happy that has not moved forward, because it should maintain the status quo while the court makes this decision. The question about whether or not
can I follow up with Justice DeCanina's question? Is the TRO that we have in our record the only TRO that is the correct TRO? We just want to make sure we're not missing, that the appellate record is not absent.
And I apologize, I did not refresh myself on what TROs were in there, but there was one TRO that was one by one judge. And then when we attended the hearing on the plea to the jurisdiction, the court needed time to review our research. And so she extended the TRO. And so there was the one with the handwriting on there was an extension of the first TRO. So I'm not sure, and I apologize, I had not reviewed that in the record. But so there's—
To follow up on that, there's no temporary injunction then. I know we talked about the TROs expiring after 14 days, but there's been no injunction regarding the prosecution of these cases, correct?
That's correct. We were requesting that, and that's when they filed the plea to the jurisdiction, which basically brought us here. So the way I understand a lot of the argument of appellant is that they are claiming that if you apply for zoning, the zoning is going to address the harm, and therefore there would be no harm if they are able to rezone. And for that reason, he's saying it's not ripe. That is not true. There is a lot of harm in losing your non-conforming rights. They're not the same as zoning rights. Zoning is actually, if you look at Chapter 211 and just casually review it, it's a set of limitations on use. The whole nature of it is to limit the property owner's use. Non-conforming use rights, hence the word non-conforming, is saying that you don't have to conform to 211. You don't have to conform to those codes. And the citations that they've issued in this case, which are in excess of $400,000 in fines, those citations demonstrate on their face the difference between having non-conforming use rights and zoning limitations. When you have non-conforming use rights, those citations do not apply. You don't have to pull permits. You don't have to get certificate of occupancy. You do have a limitation of using your property in the way you've been using it and the way my clients have been using it for the past 30 years, but you don't have to seek, to comply with all those code requests. You may voluntarily comply, which is what my clients attempted to do. So here we have a situation where they are trying to mitigate their damages by filing the application for the rezoning because they didn't know what's going to happen. The Court of Appeals review of a Board of Adjustments is on a substantial, the burden is this substantial burden, not a preponderance of the evidence, which is kind of like more than a mere scintilla. So in order to try to stay in business, they simultaneously pursued that. And as the court correctly pointed out, it is not mandated that you do one or the other. The 211.011 of the Texas Local Government Code is the exclusive procedure on what you need to follow to for a writ of certiorari to be properly before the court. Appellants have admitted that we've done that. Appellants have cited no case law.
With regards to when you say that if you have a non-conforming use certificate, I believe it's a certificate, correct?
Well, it's not a certificate. You have it. It's kind of one of those things that you have it, but the city, and you can go to the city to confirm that they recognize it. And we did, my clients did do that many years ago. They were given a letter that says, we recognize your non-conforming use rights, but you have them whether you request
it
or
not. And that's because they were outside the city limits, they were annexed, and they were using the property, correct?
That's correct.
So under the non-conforming use rights, do you have the right to use it under any zoning classification or just the zoning classification that you were using it when you were annexed?
Well, because it's not annexed, there is no zoning classification. So they were using it in the way that they used it from the beginning. And then what happens is when the city comes in after that and applies zoning, because there was no zoning when they started using it, then what happens is you are grandfathered for the use that you are engaging in at the time that the city comes in. So what?
Well, but that would have had some classification, correct? Like C2 or C3?
Prior to the
city. Given their use, what they're using it for, or could they just change it to anything they wanted to?
No, if you are using property for a batch plant, a ready mix batch plant is what it is. They're creating concrete. If you're using it for that and then the city comes in, you can keep doing that. If you're using it for a truck shop, which they were, you can keep doing that. You can keep doing what you were doing before the city came in. Regardless of what they set the zoning at, you have non-conforming use rights. You don't have to conform to their zoning. Now, there is provisions in the code for how they can take them away, which of course is another part of the suit, but you have them until they're removed. And you can have them acknowledged by the city to prevent them from citing you under code that doesn't apply and things like that. And that is what my client did many years ago. And they did send him a letter and recognize that he had non-conforming use rights. And then that went on for several more years until I believe it was February 2018 or 19. I'm getting a little confused on the date here, where they started citing him again. So the non-conforming use rights gives you the ability to keep using the property the same way you were using it when the city came in. You could not shut it down and start some completely different business. But you still lose rights because you have to now conform with whatever code ordinances come up. You have to apply for certificates of occupancy. You have to apply for permitting if you want to do anything. You have to comply with any other code restrictions that are placed that could affect your prior, whatever you've been using it for. So you're taking away some of their use rights, no matter what. Zoning would restore. And rezoning would also not address multiple other aspects of the harm that the appellees have suffered. They have pending, it's like something like 250 citations against them. And those citations carry fines up to $400,000. Even if they meet the application, those citations are still there. They have loss of reputation. There is problems with the citizens around there who have been alerted to all these alleged citations that have caused problems on the zoning issue. So there's damages well beyond what a rezoning could possibly address. All that rezoning does, yes, it gives them some use back, but it does not replace nonconforming use. It does not restore the nonconforming use, which is a greater use of your property. Again, zoning applies limitations. Nonconforming use says you don't have to conform to those limitations. So even if they are able to rezone, they have mitigated their damages to some degree, but they have not eliminated their damages. So that is where the problem is. They also—
Ms. Lundberg, the problem that I'm foreseeing, because the whole point of requiring exhaustion of administrative proceedings such as this one is that we won't have a court proceeding that will be doing something different than whether the zoning board does or the board of compliance ends up doing. So why shouldn't we wait for it to play itself out as allowed by administrative proceedings before we allow this case to go forward as required under a plea of jurisdiction, that all those, you know, citations work themselves out? I mean, if they all go against your client, that's fine. We take that up. If the zoning goes against your client, that goes up, and we all have it all in one, which is why exhausting administrative proceedings is a requirement before we move forward against this type of scenario.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, they are not the same type of proceedings. 211.011 does not say anything, and the appellants have cited no authority that says that zoning is considered a remedy. The argument of finality isn't finality of the court. It's a finality. You need the finality of the decision of the board. That is in the case law that is cited. It is a finality of the decision of the board that you are looking for to then make it ripe for filing the writ of certiorari. The zoning is not considered a remedy available. It is merely a way to mitigate your damages. The harm is done when they take away the rights, and then you have an appeal of that. So there is exhaustion. All of the case law clearly supports— the Supreme Court case of Davis versus Zoning Board of Adjustments clearly states that that is all you need to do. You file within 10 days of the Board of Adjustments' final decision, and you have jurisdiction. There are multiple cases that are cited: the Lamar Corporation versus City of Longview case, the Lindig case versus the City of Johnson, the City of San Antonio case versus El Dorado. In all of those cases, the courts proceeded with multiple causes of action when the writ was filed, and it was determined that all of these actions could proceed, even if they lost the appeal on the Board of Adjustments. So the zoning thing is really kind of a red herring. That is not a remedy. This is something that is not supported by any authority that the appellants have raised. They have stated as if a rule of law without any authority. And the case law is consistent, and there is nothing in any of the cases I've seen or anything that's been cited that says that you have to pursue zoning before you can appeal the board's decision on a writ of certiorari. So it's completely different approach. Like I said, it's merely a mitigation of damages. It's another thing you can do, but it is not required. And doing it does not take away subject matter jurisdiction. The subject matter jurisdiction was became available the minute the board's final decision was made, and we filed within 10 days. So knowing that the harm is not resolved, the courts have, by a rezoning, that cannot be an impediment either to the unconstitutional takings claim and under color of law claims, the use of the law under color of law to take away or deprive property rights. I believe that's— I'm sorry, I'm looking for my citations here. Anyway, we have two other claims. The takings claim was brought in the same petition as a secondary claim after the writ was requested. Multiple cases. I mean, the Davis versus Zoning Board case, the Lamar case, the Lindy case, the El Dorado case, all of which had been cited by appellees in their district court pleadings, those cases all have simultaneously running provisions. They all state you can, right on their face, you can pursue both at the same time. And there's a practical reason for that, because the facts that you're looking at are substantially the same. So you would have to retry the same case on the same type of facts. And so they are able to proceed. Plus, the appeal, as I stated earlier, the appeal to the district court to overturn the Board of Adjustments ruling is a substantially heavier burden of proof. So we have cases where I believe it was the Stewart case that is also cited by the appellant. In the Stewart case, she pursued both, but she lost the appeal on the Board of Adjustments because of the higher burden, more than a mere scintilla. But she won and was awarded the judgment on the takings claim. This was all decided in the same trial. It's completely common. Again, appellants throw a theory out with no authority or legal support. The cases dictate to the contrary because it happens over and over again. And it's judicially prudent because you're trying the same facts. And so why would you want to keep retrying the same facts? That could raise conflicts in the findings as well. So it is a very common practice, and it is a common practice to not necessarily win both. So you've got a preponderance of evidence, preponderance of an evidence burden on the takings claim. And on the our other claim, I need to put the 42 USC 1983 claim, which is when the a municipality uses the color of law to improperly take away property rights. That claim does not require any of these other precedents that have to occur. You do not have to exhaust legal remedies. If you look at the Owen versus Independence case, it's a United States Supreme Court case. They said that that exists regardless of anything else that's happening. You don't have to worry about a takings claim. You don't have to worry about exhaustions of remedies under the Board of Adjustments. That particular claim is based on the facts where the city went out, issued the citations, the first set. My client attempted to remedy those citations by voluntarily complying, but they froze their accounts, didn't allow them to comply by freezing their accounts. And then they continued to cite them, all while they knew they were preventing them from fixing it. And then they used those citations to then get as the basis for taking away their nonconforming rights. Oh, they have all these citations. We need to take away their non-conforming rights. And so that
before you run out of time, I do want to address the jurisdictional issue of the allowance of this court being able to order other courts to do both in the municipalities in your last 2 minutes.
That is a very important issue. And I would direct the court's attention to the State versus Morales case, which I would note that appellants don't even address in their brief, but the State versus Morales case delineates when a civil court can have that authority. Our complaint is not to the constitutionality of the ordinance. It is to the way it was applied. And in Morales, I'm reading from Morales, it states that a civil court has jurisdiction to declare or to enjoin. I'm going to point out, I'm not going to read verbatim what it says. I'm going to skip to the parts that apply. They enjoin to enjoin the enforcement of a criminal statute when there is evidence that the statute at issue is unconstitutionally applied and irreparable injury to property or personal rights is threatened. That is on, I can't find the page number right now, but it's the second head note. And then we have a Village versus Tiki Island case, which is a very similar fact scenario to ours. In that case, they applied Morales and they found that the court, it was the same thing, that the court had jurisdiction to stop the citations and stop the prosecution of the citations that were being issued to that property owner for continuing to operate a short-term rental facility. And they applied that exact thing. They said the statute was unconstitutionally applied and it resulted in irreparable injury to the property or personal rights of the property owner. And so we have a case, the Village of Tiki Island versus Ronquil case, that actually fits our fact scenario, where they found that Morales applied and that the court did have the authority. I would also like to point out that appellants appear to have abandoned their claim that the court did not have jurisdictional authority to stop the prosecution of the civil citations. Those are not raised in his brief. So I believe we're only talking about the criminal citations, but Morales is talking about criminal citations in this case. So the Morales case controls. And then we have a more recent case, 2019, August 2019 case, Town of Flower Mound versus Eel Ridge Operating LLC. In that case, they explored whether or not 211.011, the restraining order language in that statute, would also mean they were authorizing injunction. While they found that it did not, they did state
and note. I'm finish up that last sentence. Your time is up.
Okay. The Flower Mound case notes that just because a particular local government code provision does not authorize an injunction, the court is not necessarily without jurisdiction to issue injunctive relief under other authority, such as the Texas Practice Civil Remedies Code 65.011, which is the authority of which we're seeking the injunction.
Thank you, Ms. Lundberg. All right, Mr. Adams, you have the rest of your 5 minutes at this time.
Thank you, Justices. Very briefly, I want to address a few points. The first is the assertion that the non-conforming use is somehow more expansive than zoning. That is not correct. Again, going back to the basic principles that, like a fly trapped in amber, you can't change, you can't alter, you can't expand, you can't contract, you can't even give up that use which was grandfathered in. And the assertion that somehow non-conforming use gives you a carte blanche for pulling permits for new construction, gives you a carte blanche for, you know, outdoor storage, all the things that are illegal, they're illegal regardless. It doesn't matter whether you have non-conforming use or whether the property was properly zoned. Those particular violations would exist regardless. So that non-conforming use is no defense to those types of tickets, which the appellees have. I'd also point out to the court, again, that the board's decision with regard to the revocation of the non-conforming use for appellees is not final until the court, after a substantial evidence review, tells us it's final, either by affirming or by reversing or by remanding. But it is the last stage which we haven't come to with regard to the non-conforming use. With regard to Stewart, which is a Dallas case, that's a completely different case. The city of San Antonio wrote a amicus brief that was joined in by Houston and a number of other cities in Texas. That relates to a 214 demolition case. The facts are very different, and it wasn't all in one proceeding. They had been found to be a nuisance under 214. They had appealed it, and then in the middle of the appeal, the city of Dallas demolished the building. So yes, of course, there's going to be a takings claim in that instance, and that's a horrible policy that I don't think Houston or San Antonio or many other cities followed, but that explains that weird scenario as far as Stewart, city of Dallas versus Stewart. And I would also point out that we did refer to the administrative hearing officer cases in our brief, and that is a civil set of hearings done in municipal court. So again, the end point being, Your Honor, Justices, is that we have a process, an administrative hearing process, which has exclusive jurisdiction, and that's under 211 with regard to the non-conforming use. That process has not been finalized yet. It's not over. So all these extraneous claims are not ripe in state court at this time. They need to finish with a substantial evidence review by the trial court on the nonconforming use. And again, there is that interaction on the zoning. They've chosen to do that. That's a voluntary thing. Absolutely right. It is not mandated that they do that, but they've chosen to do that.
He's also arguing that it's completely different and giving them different remedies, that each of them provides separate and apart remedies. And that's why it's not an exhaustion of administrative remedies that has to be done before they can proceed forward with this litigation.
And I agree with the court. As far as exclusive jurisdiction goes and exhausting administrative remedies under the nonconforming use, absolutely. I agree 100%. But since they voluntarily taken the path down the zoning, then, and again, I wasn't able to find any case law that says, but there is some implication that there is an interaction in terms of that the courts should go ahead and stay it, especially if a lot of the same issues are addressed and resolved. And in fact, again, our position is that a rezoning is actually far more beneficial for the appellees than nonconforming use. And with that, I turn back my time. I thank you for your indulgences. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. There's nothing further from Justice Tejerina or Justice Longoria. This case will be under submission.